I want to talk some about applying these ideas
sure.
in the world. And specifically, to begin with what you describe in A Brief History of Everything as the basic moral intuition.
Sure.
And first to understand that, and then to apply it to some classic moral conundrums.
Okay.
But to begin with, you say that the basic moral intuition is that the goal of any decision should be to promote the greatest depth for the greatest span.
Right.
So can you explain that?
Sure. Let's use our sort of generic seven-level scheme again. And I'll start by giving some examples, simple examples, atoms, molecules, cells, to show what we mean by depth and span. An atom to a molecule to a cell. Let's just say we use that as a clunky three-level scheme. And we say, so the cell has three levels of depth. Depth means however many vertical levels are contained in any thing. So a cell has a depth of three. A molecule has a depth of two, and an atom has a depth of one. We can say a quark has zero if you want it to be something like that. So depth is a measurement of evolutionary growth, of development, of levels of consciousness that one has moved through and so on. It sounds sort of like what it means. We say somebody has a great deal of depth, sort of what it implies. Span means the number of things on any given level. So depth is the number of levels something has, and span is the number of things on any level. So if you actually look at the span now, just the sheer number of atoms, molecules, and cells, there's a very interesting thing that jumps out. And there's no way around this, which is what's kind of interesting. It was first pointed out by a very brilliant researcher named Eric Jantsch in The Self-Organizing Universe. It was one of my favorite books. The greater the depth, the less the span. And what that means is if you look at the number of atoms in the entire universe, there's a lot. I bet there's 400 or 500. I mean, there's a lot of atoms out there. Now, atoms come together to form molecules, obviously. And under fairly rare circumstances, molecules usually form only on things like planets, for example. Mostly in space and in stars and all that. It's so hot that atoms can't settle down enough to come together and crystallize the molecules. But the number of molecules in the universe will always be less than the number of atoms. And there's no way around that because they make them up. And so no matter how many molecules you have, there's going to be more atoms. And then molecules themselves come together into cells. So there will always be fewer cells than there will be molecules. And there's no way around that because you have to count the molecules in the cell as well too. So greater depth means less span. Now that's a very interesting sort of thing. It's kind of almost a paradox and a dilemma, but there's no way around it because the higher uses components of the lower. So if you're looking at a similar kind of thing in stages of growth in human beings, what you find is that the higher you go in terms of stages, the fewer people that are at it. That's greater depth, less span. There are fewer people in graduate school than in kindergarten. It's just sort of how it works. Now, but everybody can still go to graduate school. We're not saying that you can't do that. It's just that it's harder, it's rarer, people can drop out and so on. So if you look at our seven-level scheme, and let me give just a little technical example of what we mean. If you look at something like cognitive development, there's young children first form images and then symbols and then concepts. And an image of a tree looks like a tree, whereas the symbol, T-R-E-E, doesn't look like the tree. So a symbol is a harder task than a simple image. But many images can be brought together into a symbol, and many symbols can be brought together into a concept, and many concepts are brought together into a rule. It's that kind of thing. So it's like atoms coming together in molecules and molecules coming together in cells. It does then raise the dilemma that on balance, the higher the developmental growth, the fewer the people that are at it. The question then becomes, how do you value these things? In other words, is it better to have one Mother Teresa at level 7, let's say, or 4 Hell's Angels at level 2? Do you see what I mean? You get into these incredibly intricate, annoying, difficult things where you have to sort of decide relative worth. And the classic case for any sort of ethical theory is the lifeboat example. That's really, you're in a lifeboat, there are 10 people, you have to throw 3 out or everybody's going to sink. Now, that's the real test of an ethical theory because that's where you really have to figure out what's worth what. And it's very, very hard to deal with those kinds of circumstances. Any ethical theory can stand up to, well, I want to love everybody and be kind and all that. Yeah, right, you got to throw three people out. Now, you know, get on with it. That's where it becomes very interesting. So there have been different answers to this historically, and one of them is the utilitarian, which is what the greatest good for the greatest number of people. That sort of seems to make a certain amount of sense, but it tends to leave out the depth dimension. Because does it really mean that we want to have as much good as possible for 1,000 Hell's Angels? Or do we want to have maybe just 5 Albert Schweitzers? Do you see what I mean? It's very kind of. So the basic moral intuition, it's not the greatest good for the greatest number. It's increase the greatest depth for the greatest span. In other words, increase depth, but that has to be balanced with span, or the number of people it can be extended to. And it doesn't give a pat answer to anything. It just says you can't just emphasize span, because that would just say, well, great, anything that's good for viruses then has to be the best thing to do for everybody, since there are more of them. So AIDS is good for viruses. A billion HIV particles are produced every day in an AIDS patient. Therefore, let AIDS abound, because that's the greatest good for the greatest number. And that doesn't really seem to be very ethical. But you can't just say depth. You can't just say all we want are nothing but enlightened beings in a certain way. First of all, because everybody's born at square one. Second of all, each of these, quote, lower levels have their own functions to perform. You can't have cells without atoms or molecules. So you can't just get rid of atoms and molecules. They're parts of cells. So you have to have span and you have to have depth, and how do you apportion it? And what I'm saying, the basic moral intuition, isn't an answer to that. I'm just saying all of us, because we intuit ever-present spirit, we intuit that spirit is present in all things, but we also intuit that some things have more spirit than others. They have more depth.
So what do we do on the lifeboat, Ken? What are we going to do? We've got 10 people and 3 of us have to get off. How are we going to apply the basic moral intuition?
Well, that's where you would start there. You can go to extreme cases and see how different moral theories would differentiate it. If you have an egalitarian theory, there's no way to tell. All 10 people are equal, and you're just going to have to draw lots or toss somebody or something like that. When you get to depth and span, you're looking at, and this is, it gets controversial, because you have to put your cards on the table. If there were, you would say, okay, who are we going to keep in? People with greater depth obviously get a greater weight. So if you had great realized beings versus Hell's Angels, yes, that's Hell's Angels are going to go. If you had people whose potential had reached its peak and there was no further growth and all things else being considered equal, you would take that into account. But there's no calculus of this. You can't turn the crank and get the answer. You'd have to see the actual 10 people who are actually in front of you. And then it would probably also depend upon whether the rest of the people share this awareness or not. And if you're the captain and you're simply in charge, then fine, you're integrally informed and you can make your best judgment as to the greatest depth times the greatest span and how you're going to get that interesting combination. One of the reasons that I bring the basic moral intuition up a lot is if you look at ecological concerns, you see a really good example of how difficult it is to choose depth and span. You have to try to make some guess at how to balance them. A Siberian tiger has an enormous amount of depth compared to a worm, for example, or an ant. So what are we willing to do to save a Siberian tiger? How much depth is that worth? We can't just say it's the same as a virus. It clearly has more. So the bioequality theories or ethics, those don't work at all, really. How to make those decisions? There's no pat answer. But I'm saying that that's what people are going through. They make that decision. You actually look and you go, wait, that's a Siberian tiger. That is worth more than a mosquito. I have to take that into account. So those decisions of depth come into play when people make moral decisions.